Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Dr. Ayn Cates Sullivan. She is the author of two books that we're talking about today, Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales, and Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses. With a master's and doctorate in literature from Columbia University and King's College in London, Sullivan actually walked the British Isles and Ireland to reclaim the stories that she has assembled in her Legends of the Grail series, the Grail being defined as the divine feminine. And the book Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales has won the 2019 Independent Publishers Book Award Gold in Visionary New Age Fiction and the 2019 Silver with Nautilus in Women's Fiction. So we welcome once again to Common Threads, Ayn Cates Sullivan. Hello, Ayn.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Certainly, certainly. You know, something I didn't mention last week, I actually had thought about starting out with this, is that When I originally got word of your books, I was a little bit dismissive simply because I thought they might be something other than they were. I didn't think it would have the academic rigor that I like when dealing with things like mythology. But when I read your background, I go, wait a minute here. This is somebody with a little bit of substance. This isn't somebody who read a couple of Irish novels and saw one or two movies and decided to go on a vision quest and all of a sudden write two books. And here's the thing. When somebody hears that you won an award for a book in the visionary / new age fiction, some people might get the impression that it's just a lightweight, and your books are not lightweight. I think that they definitely have the kind of substance, the spiritual substance and the intellectual substance and the historical substance that at least I like. I hope other people do as well. So I wanted to let you know that. So there you go.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. I started doing the research for these books 35 years ago. And when I collected the folklore, I really didn't know what to do with it. It was just entertaining. It was fun. When I was working on my doctorate, I would come back with these exciting stories of fairy tales and so forth. And my tutor, who was wonderful, this was at King's College London. And she would say, this is fantastic. I know it's very exciting for you, but we're going to get you through your doctoral program. You're going to finish your thesis, and then you can do whatever you want to. And actually, I was worried when I handed her the book, because I thought she might dismiss it. But she actually says, I love this. I absolutely love it. And could I write the intro? So she's done a forward to Legends of the Grail.
No, that is wonderful. A couple of things that we didn't get to last week that were on my mind. One thing I noticed in your book is, they're books about goddesses. And more often than not, when you read books about mythology, the word god or goddess, when referring to deities, is often used with a lowercase g. You have chosen uppercase g's, which again, I don't see a lot of, but clearly that was intentional, and I'd love to know your reasoning for promoting them, if you will.
Well, generally, you would have, God in the Christian sense would be capitalized, and then in a pagan culture, you would have them as lowercase because the pagan gods and goddesses were demoted. and I really struggled with it for a while because I thought, now why would I talk about God? And I'm really speaking of the goddess as an aspect of a greater intelligence. and what of which everything is a part. And so someone asked me why I didn't capitalize Earth and why Earth wasn't important and why Earth had been in some cases even demonized, the feminine. If you think about, especially during the Middle Ages, the monks and nuns were trained to hate everything feminine, everything of the earth. And I thought, well, part of what I need to do, or my intention in this series, is to look at this again and go, maybe we're in a crisis in an ecocide right now because of this very thing, and we need to have a look again at all things feminine. It might be that we really need to put our feet on the soil and walk in these ancient places and just remember how beautiful this earth is and how important each member of this, each, not only the human family and all colors and genders and races of this human family, but also all the animals and plants. And the indigenous cultures, the European indigenous people, really understood that, as do the Native Americans here. And so I thought in writing this book, that was an invitation to start exploring why some of these people might have gone into the cairns. They probably weren't all just passage tombs where people were buried. I think a lot of them were sites where you would go and you would attune to your ancestors. And there were ancient practices that could even serve us now. And it does, if you go to a place like Ireland and you have an experience with a fairy, you can go into a kind of ontological shock. You think these things can't be true. But on the other hand, what's more beautiful than going to a graveyard or an ancient site and speaking to those that you love and then maybe feeling something in that place?
Describe, if you will, the foundational religion, or should we say religions? If you go back to ancient Ireland, I'm assuming that there were multiple religions that ended up sharing a great deal of information, sharing mythology and all of that, but might have slightly different practices, slightly different beliefs at the same time. I'm wondering if there is enough of a common denominator to talk about ancient Irish religion as one thing, at least for our purposes here, and try to get a sense of what it was. And was it purely polytheistic? Was it monotheistic? Did it have any monotheistic inclinations? Was it henotheistic? What's your best take on that?
So in the back of my book, if you really want to, I have a theology in the back, a her story in the back of the book. And so it takes you back 30, in the Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses, and it goes back 33,000 years. So you can follow, there is a timeline to follow, because there, if you look at the Labor Gabala, which is the book of the invasions of Ireland, you can see that there's several different people. And they all had different practices. Some of the characters, some of the goddesses, come all the way through. Like, for instance, the Cailleach, the old woman of the world. It's a 10,000-year-old story. And she becomes the witch over time. But if you take her, she was originally a wiki, which meant wise woman. And if you take her all the way back, she was the one who made sure all the people were fed and that all the dreams of the people were understood. So obviously that's very pre-Christian. So you're looking at an old culture, and many people feel that at a certain point there was a goddess culture. That hasn't been proven, but there's a feeling that was the case. And then as you get to there's another really ancient deity, and it's the last story in Legends of the Grail. You have the Bridget and the Cailleach. So Bridget, it's called the Springtime Maiden, and the Cailleach is the winter, the woman of winter. And so there's a handoff between the traditions. So the old woman of the world at St. Bridget's Day, right, because she survives into Christianity. So the handoff is around February 1st, and that's when the snowdrops blossom. So it's interesting to go to the places and track somebody like Bridget, who's a very, very powerful archetype, if you think of her as just as a huge figure for a minute, a thought pattern that people have wanted to worship for a very long period of time. And so if you go back far enough, you can see her, I think it was up until the Roman invasion in Britain when they put the flame out, I believe. So her flame burnt, like the Vestal Virgin flames, burnt for a very long period of time. And it was recently relit in Kildare. And so now you can take your candle and relight the flame of Bridget. She survives in Christianity as the midwife of Jesus. And you'll see the same thing with Anya, Anu, Danu, Anya, Anne, Saint Anne, who becomes the grandmother of Jesus. So there are different places in Ireland where they were worshipped in different ways, and different regions have different ways of doing this. In the south of Ireland, it's actually lovely. There are these two mounds, and they light. They have these little rocks on the top, and they light the nipples of Anna to invite in the fertility of the spring. So I thought that was kind of fun. So time period. So Heroines of Avalon and other tales is a little easier to deal with because we're working from the 5th century, mostly 5th century to the 12th century. So we're working with the early Celtic Church and in sort of more Christian era. But Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses, is much more ancient. So that would mostly be pre-Christian. So, you know, we were talking about common threads. So one of the things I had a challenge with in handling this amount of material was a massive time frame. And in a way, I was following a common thread, like Anya. And you see over a period of time, depending on what culture you arrive in, you get a little bit of a different image, and yet in some way they're also the same. And so they'll have more or less importance depending on what the dominant culture is. But I loved Anya, well, my namesake, A-Y-N-I-A, and you take her a little further back, she's A-I-N-E, and before that she's A-N-U. So she actually arrives with the coming of the Tuatha De Dunan, which is several thousand years before Christ. So in that tale, she is a solar goddess. And what I loved about her, because you don't find her story in Greek and Roman mythology, because in Greek and Roman mythology, women are generally moon goddesses. They're going to reflect the light of the masculine, which is wonderful. But in this particular tradition, she's a solar goddess. So she reflects her own light in her own way. So she's a goddess that carries brilliancy. Over time, if you follow her into Wales, the people that would worship her there, maybe in the form, she can also become Dawn. They would worship her as the one that awakens the glaciosa, or the inner light, so that you have the direct knowing of God or the goddess, depending on your tradition. And so you have to be very open-minded because you're dancing with Christian concepts and pagan concepts and, you know, different layers of pagan concepts. But if you can have fun with it and do a little jig, you know, with some of the bards, there's some great characters that emerge there.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Professor Ayn Cates Sullivan. We're talking about her books, Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales, and Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses. So in speaking of your namesake, Anu or Anye, you say that she was absorbed into Saint Anne, who is the grandmother of Jesus. I'm curious how that would happen. How would an Irish mythological goddess come to be personified in a Hebrew, pretty much a Hebrew tradition that then evolved into a Greek tradition. And also we're talking about somebody who is historical. Now, I can't swear that Jesus's grandmother really was named Anne, but we know he had a grandmother. So, you know, how did that happen?
So let's think about it practically for a moment. So most of us know the legends of King Arthur, and then you wonder how can King Arthur appear in the 5th century, and then the 7th century, and then the 12th century? How can this happen? Or is it just that his stories come back to life, or is he just a myth? So if you go back and really look at it, I actually study with John Matthews, who's England's expert on Celtic mythology at Oxford. And so I go back twice a year, so we have these conversations, and they're very fascinating. And what he's discovered over a period of time is that Arthur's not a person. It's a title, like Caesar or emperor or lord. So the person in a particular age that holds the energy of the hope and reunification, the unity consciousness of a place, and that in this particular place would be Britain, that person that holds that peace would be called Arthur quite often. I mean, you also see, like, for instance, King Alfred holds a very similar kind of energy in the 9th century. But so if we take that same idea back, so Guinevere also, there would be many, many, many different Guineveres. Guinevere is the May Queen. Whoever the May Queen is at the time would have the title Guinevere. And Guinevere is very important, just a little side note, Guinevere is very important because in the Celtic tradition, a man cannot rule as a leader, hero, or king unless his woman deems it so. So he needs the support. Another thing I really love about the Celtic tradition. So what's fun about Arthurian legend, this is Heroine Savalon and Other Tales, the latest book, we're dealing with early Christian church. And so you have the old stories, these old Welsh stories that are still there, that have Eärendrud, the goddess Eärendrud, and we've had Blwdewis, and some of these tales that you'll find in the Mabinogion, ancient Welsh texts. But you also now have Avalon and the stories of the Grail, which are very well-known stories. People tell these stories over and over and over again. In fact, Eleanor of Aquitaine loved the stories in the 12th century so much, she had the Welsh bards come and tell them in her courts. And so these stories go on. And they go on. Why do Legends of the Grail stories continue? Because we all want to find our wholeness. In this early 5th century time, part of what they were worried about or what was going on in the culture is that these goddesses that were worshipped in these different places. And so each spring or well, like, you know, the chalice well I was talking about, if you go through Ireland and Britain, you'll see there are all these holy wells. But before they were Christianized, there were all these local deities that were worshipped at these different places, and that became illegal. And if you did that, you got killed. So over time, you were not allowed to worship in nature. So these people... And actually, a lot of the places where they were sacred sites, a church would be built on top, and then the holiday would have to shift. So instead of Bridget's Day or Bridget's Day, it becomes St. Bridget's Day. And you see it over and over and over again in this particular tradition. So it's a wonderful, you can feel the tension. The Romans have left, and so there's chaos. You know, the pagan gods and goddesses come back in, and there's chaos because of that. Christianity comes in. The very first book, Legends of the Grail, starts with the story of Kaesar. And Kaesar is a biblical story. It's the story of the granddaughter of Noah, Kaesar, who was supposedly in the wrong lineage. She was not in the lineage of Abel. She was in the lineage of Cain. And so she was not allowed to board the ark. But she was quite magical, and she understood that the wind was blowing, and there was going to be this terrible storm. And so what did she do? She built her own ark, and she puts her friends upon it, 50 friends, the poet Fintan, who's the first great poet of Ireland, and her herd of horses, And when the winds come and the storm brews, then off she goes into the ocean. And it's the goddess Eru who comes and grabs the ship and brings it ashore. And so in the Labrakabbala, which of course now was history, now is considered myth, Kaser, this woman from the Middle East, and this biblical woman is the first person to step foot on Ireland, and so this begins the goddess tradition. So you know, we're going to follow these invasions probably for a long time, and DNA testing and all sorts of things. But it's very interesting.
You mentioned that both Bridget and Patrick, the saints, kept the mystical light alive. That's what you say in your book. But would they not have been opposed to traditional Irish religion? Was there any interplay at all? Was there any absorption of the Irish myth into that form of Catholicism back then? Or was it a matter of the early Christians coming in, led by Patrick, unless you tell me different, and that all of this was completely squashed or went underground?
Well, I do talk about it in my book a little bit. The triple goddess, if you go to the ancient cairns and you walk in, you'll see they're all almost always three rooms, and there's an old tradition of the triple goddess that's really part of the culture there. When St. Patrick comes in, of course, he's not actually from Ireland. He was a slave that was taken from Britain. He has a vision. When he's finally freed, he has a vision, and he returns to Ireland as a savior of the people. Now, St. Patrick must have had an incredible amount of light. I would love to meet St. Patrick. He's because of St. Patrick and what St. Patrick held, Ireland was in 300 years of a golden age while there was a dark age going on in Britain and Europe. And so he held something that was very special. There were some other things he did that I'm not so crazy about. He was really interested in destroying the goddess traditions, and he was very interested, and he took over Bamba's Day as St. Patrick's Day. So, you know, you have one tradition, and then the next tradition comes in, and it takes over, and there you'll find elements of the old tradition and the new tradition. What he did that I really appreciate is that he made sure that they wrote down the folklore. So at that point, with the Celtic Church, I think the Celtic Church was eventually banned. I don't know that story so much, but I think eventually the Catholic Church fell out with the Catholic Church. But I don't think there was internet, you know, and telephones back then. So St. Patrick was having a grand time in Ireland. And they had a lot of the old folklore. It sort of wove into the culture. I mean, the people were still in the old stone places, and they maybe weren't worshiping by the spring anymore, but in this building. But it's hard to change the mindset of a people. And so if you can say, the Irish people, I have a great story for you, actually. This is of a Munster king. This is in my husband's lineage. St. Patrick goes to meet the last of the great Sullivan kings, the dark-eyed ones, and he's in Cashel in the southwest coast of Ireland. And so these Gaelic kings, you know, they're aware of the sun god Lu, and so they love this idea that there's this savior king, this king of light. And so he says to St. Patrick, now we're in about, I think, the 7th century now, so it's a long time ago, but he's there, and St. Patrick has his crozier, and the king says, I really want to have this experience. Can you give me an experience of the Christ? And St. Patrick says, absolutely. So he must have had some lightning in his crozier, you know, some kind of, like maybe Shaktipat if you're in India. So he puts his crozier to the ground very hard, and the earth shakes, and the king shakes. And the king seems to have, you know, he's having some shaking going on, but he's trying to keep himself composed. And then St. Patrick gets ready to move his crozier, which is his staff, and he can't move it because he's realized he's put it through the king's foot. He finally pulls it out of the king's foot, and he said, "Why didn't you cry out? Why didn't you say anything?" And the king says, "I thought that was the initiation."
And as we know, in certain cultures, initiations can be brutal.
They can. Well, the old Gaelic kings, I'm sure they've had some swords, you know. So
this is true. And we are close to being right out of time for this edition of Common Threads. But very quickly, if people are interested in your work, aside from possibly picking up these two wonderful books, Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales and Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses, how can people connect with you?
Oh, they can go to my website, and my first name is spelled A-Y-N, Kate Sullivan. And I have a newsletter you can follow. I have an events page. I sometimes take people on quests through Wales or Scotland or Ireland or some wild place. And if that's in alignment with who you are, it can be fun. So yes, you can go there, join the newsletter, and see what the activities are. And I love hearing from people. If people read the stories and they're touched in some way, or they're bothered by something, or whatever it is, I really enjoy keeping the common thread of the our spiritual quest open. What's important to me is that we're open, we're exploring, we're wondrous children discovering what God or goddess or the infinite intelligence means for us.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so very much for this week and last week as well.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. With me this week was Ayn Kate Sullivan talking about her books, Heroines of Avalon and Other Tales, and Legends of the Grail, Stories of Celtic Goddesses. Please join us again next week right here on Common Threads.